I'm Titan. I'm a pretty good guy for nerd. But I'm not mentally stable. Oh yeah, we'll catch muskies. Oh yeah, oh boy, we'll catch 50s. Oh yeah, we'll catch muskies. Oh boy.
All right, folks, we'll welcome 50s. To the Muskie 360 podcast. A Jay Bird.
Steve, you're what's cooking?
Living the dream. At this
are
point,
you?
No, I'm not. It's every day's a waking nightmare.
Sarcasm.
No, it's just running around like crazy here, guys. I warned you last week. Had the classic coming to town, and it is, imagine, everybody you know is now in your town, and everyone needs something. So it is just craziness.
Bassmaster Classics in Knoxville. So is that starting right now, the whole build-up for it and everything?
Well, all the crap you got to deal with. And it's mm-hmm. like, oh, Papa needs a spare tire. Okay, forget what you think's going on. It's the behind the scenes of when you really know people and you're, you know what I'm saying? It's like, hey, what's going on with this? What's going on with that? Hey, we need, so that therein lies, that's the devil in the details right there. Everybody's got their own craziness going on, so I'm trying to help get everybody everything that they need and getting it all done, because I end up, if you don't know it or not, I end up with dealing with most of the pro staff in the bass world on that. So
sure.
Go-between on that. Most people don't know that's part of the gig. So I'm dealing, it's something. I'm ripping my hair out as we speak. But anyway, other than that, guys, I have to say it. Tremendous, humbling, as many thank yous as I can give you to the listeners and the people that bought Banshee, Critter, Menace. Unbelievable amount of people supporting what we're doing here, what I'm doing here, however you want to put that. But craziness there at the Muskie Shop, Jay. Some might say absolute bedlam.
Yeah, it's been a crazy week. Yeah.
Yeah. It is killer. Huh?
Yeah, the stuff just came out a week ago. Yeah, we had that big debut. I think it was last Tuesday. So, yeah.
Nuts. And
impressive.
I finally got people that are hitting me up already that have got products. And it's funny. A couple people are like just realizing what Banshee can do. You mm-hmm. know, as far as the walk the dog. And, you know, I was talking about it with a guy on the phone, day before yesterday, and just said basically that just kills four, you know, those mini gliders and your 4 or 5 inch glider, and just forget about it. Just throw that, because you just have so much control and so much, you know, ability to articulate it in even stuff. But Jay, here's the deal. Slammed, and guys, I apologize. What is it Tuesday? You know, what is it?
Running. I think it's Tuesday. I think so.
I feel like it's been
trying, folks.
I feel like it's been Monday forever. But now is the time of year to break out, Jay, the Creaker Extreme, right? I hit that Creaker Extreme.
Oh, Creaker Extreme. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, It's one of these deals where I ebb and flow in and out of this. But believe it or not, previously here, Dr. Bob went creaking for the first time, Jay.
Now, was this yesterday? Went all creaking?
A few days, right?
Okay.
And we have the creaking. And the deal is this. When you go from fishing, say, you know, he fishes metro Minneapolis, you know, the Twin Cities, Canada, you know, some water there that borders, you know, the two states of Wisconsin, and you go creaking, it's a whole different experience. And it was really fun to have a discussion about that, and just to let's hit some of the highlights and some of the points of this, of how that experience is just different, right? So if you've never done it, I recommend getting out and doing a float, Jay, because you look at it, Wisconsin guys, okay, you got tons of moving water right there. Mm-hmm. But most guys never go and do it, whether it, you know, I'm floating something here. I mean, that day we were out, I think it was Hook 2, Saw 6, you know, but not from just an action standpoint, but from the standpoint of what it's going to teach you on the water. And, you know, it's a refresher for me to get my brain back in it. It's usually this time of the year in the spring when I start thinking about doing it. And it was neat with Bob on the first time because he's so observant of what's happening. And it was kind of like in real time watching him make the adjustments of when you're on skinny moving water, first and foremost. And what I think's beneficial for people to consider of, you know, I don't care where you're at, just seek it out, because you've got these scenarios. Minnesota, you've got them, right? You've got this, there's freaking, I think you have your own species in a creek up there, or your own strain of muskies. And there's a lot of opportunities to do this smaller water. And what I like about it is it forces decision making, right? There were spots yesterday where we were drifting in a 12-foot boat, Jay, two grown men in a 12-foot boat, drifting probably 5 or 6. That's boogieing, right?
That's moving, sure.
That's moving, yep, when you're going through the swift stuff. But what I think that is such a moment here where I say you got to make decisions is, this is not throw a cast and just it lands somewhere. First and foremost, you have to identify your targets. You're moving, right? This is running and gunning. And it's kind of funny, like, I hear all the Canadian guys or this guy, well, I'm running and gunning. Okay, that just means pulling, that means driving real fast in between spots, right?
Right, right.
For me, thought process on this is, imagine you have one chance, right, to hit prime water. It really trains your brain to look ahead, right? We're looking ahead, and you can make the cast in front of you. You can make the cast 5 feet from that, or you can make the next cast, or you can wait a second and make another cast of going, what's the best? Read that water. Where is their slack water? And you're looking ahead, and you're thinking ahead. It's not arbitrary. And the thing that is learnable from that, and the lesson that I carry on to fishing on the lake is like when I'm on the boat and just like with Bob, I'll say this, that's the juice, right? That's the juice, where that is the spot on spot where you can just identify it visually. You don't even have to make the cast. You can just basically look and go, that's what a muskie's going to use. And I think what's powerful or compelling about fishing that small water, especially if you get moving water, is A, if you have speed and velocity that's pushing you and you can't fight it, you have to basically recognize things real quickly to be successful. And it's superbly teachable, where you'll notice patterns arise of, oh, okay, that's what a slack water eddy looks like, or that's how that of reading the water, where it's not, this is skinny water, but it's all the same of structure plays the same. All of those elements tie together, but you add in that element of you only get one shot and you really have to read the water, scan the water. You're also looking at, you know, it's increasing casting accuracy and decision making. It's really, really a thing. And Jay, I mean, when you float the river there, you have a modicum of that, right? You have flow. Absolutely. Right? And you're a river guy. And I mean, You get what I'm saying there, where you, in lieu of firing the engine up and backing it up on the river you're on, you got to make the shot, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, know, absolutely. So. Yeah, I'm not nearly as much current as you're dealing with right now on your creek and the condensers, but yeah.
You no, yeah, I mean.
Recognize spots, yeah, especially if it's a new stretch that you're not really familiar mm-hmm. with, the current water levels and all that, you know?
Right. And that's the thing is, yes, you can fight it. Like, I mean, when I was fishing yesterday, you could fight it for a little bit. And like the really fast drift stuff, you know, you're just kind of blowing through and you come into these slack waters and you're fishing, you know, the slack water where it's a much gentler flow. But the lesson to be learned there is something that does translate everywhere else. You know, and that's what Bob and I discussed in the boat of, you don't, you know, if you had to make the cast, because it all parlays back to finding the juice on the spot, right? And we only have one swing of the bat, maybe two, but a lot of times you got one swing, right? You scan
it. Right, because you're blowing by the spot.
And- mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you identify it. Now, you know, and you go, well, how do I identify that? And, you know, got my refresher course here. It's like I said, last year I slacked on it. I love doing my creaking because it's just a different animal. But, you know, got my refresher course here recently. And seeing it, right, seeing those reeds is paying a tremendous amount of attention. What's ahead of you and looking, and I'm telling you, people just, when I say reading the water, a lot of times we talk about reading the water, it's overarching. Like reading, we might be reading birds and terrestrial activity and all this stuff. You know what I'm saying? When we talk about the overarching theme of reading the water. When you're creaking, you're looking at the water itself, which I think is just something that if you've not experienced, you need to do, because seeing those seams and those slack lines or slack water in real time, right, and having to pick that out, you kind of train your brain and you're looking at it. Okay, there's flat water adjacent to this. Now, you know, those are kind of like the core things that you're going to look for. Muskies are lazy. We know they want to lay in areas of slack water. And if they're highly predating, they want to lay on structure. But it's funny when you look at it. And I think one thing that clicked with Bob quite a bit is here you're taking water, Jay. You know, at deepest 7 feet, 8 feet, right? It is pouring the rain now here at the Muskie 360 Studios. I'm sorry, I just caught that. Sorry. Just started pouring. Yay. Well, going to be a fun day on the boat. I think I'm going to get out my slickers when I leave the house here in a few. But what I'm getting at is even in that water, in the majority of it being shallow water, the same rules applied, right? So you're getting to see a condensed version of especially seams, right? Current seams. You hear guys talk about on all these different bodies of water, whether it be St. Clair, whether it be a reservoir, whether it be one of the flowages in Wisconsin, current plays, right? When you go creaking, you get to see that in a tiny format. Now, you take that tiny format, and we talk about reading the water. Now, take that and just blow it up to whatever flowage you're on. Say you're on, you know, the Rainbow. I don't care what it is. If it has current from it, it plays the same way. And it's just an expansion and contraction of the exact same rules and properties in creaking as it is to fishing a reservoir. Right? And you'll see fish, guess where they retreat? In shallow, those shallow flowages. If they're not holding on shallow structure, you're just dead in the dead middle. Now, okay, how does that play to it? It's adjacent to shallow feeding flats, right? Oh, you're casting up on shallow edges. You're not getting any action. Let's cast to the middle or cast to the deep stuff in a creaking situation, right? It's, I think, educational, and it's almost binary to see it where you have a muskie trapped in a smaller form of what you fish most of the time. Right. And it's cathartic, and I think helpful in it for a standpoint for people to understand just those structural shifts. Right. And then that read on the water and, you know, things you got to look for if you're doing this, if you're doing a drift, you will see that structures that are productive. Right. Because a lot of people don't think, quote unquote, structure in shallow water. But you hear the term holes, Jay, right? You've heard that forever. Fish in the right holes, right? There's holes here, there.
Well, yeah, you said, you know, they max out maybe 7 feet underwater, right? But I imagine a lot of that stretch is like a foot and a half to 2 feet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there. There's
sure.
Buddy, there's a couple hitting the bottom and the trolling motor pops off funsies. Sure. You know, I love it. You know, I love
pretty
that.
Clear water, or is
clear where I'm at?
Yeah. Pretty clear. Ooh, okay.
Exceptionally clear. Especially the runs we've been doing before the classic little deal here. But with that scenario, it's educational and informative for people to understand that. And whether, like I said, if you fish the Wisconsin, that, you know, or whatever, there's a ton of stuff. You can get down to plover, you can go all your Wisconsin stuff here, all your Pennsylvania stuff. I can find you the same scenario in just about any state that's got a muskie. and why that's important. But if you're fishing it, and you hear holes, and that's the big, they're in this hole, they're in that hole.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Right. What I'm getting at is, yes, that's the deep water retreat, and you will find at different times, oh, they're up on the shallow side of that. But when they're not there, where are they? They're in the hole. Which is, translate that to a lake or a reservoir. Right? Now, once you have the creeker thing under control, right? Conceptually, we go, okay, we're a creeker, and we got our, they're in the old wood pile hole, and they're either up on the sand side or up in, or in the deep water. That translates to people when it clicks in their head, because the juxtaposition between shallow and deep is a cast. And you've got to take that same concept, and what I've done is take the exact same thing and now move it to bigger water. And that, the difference for people of like how people react to fishing, the instantaneously they're covering shallow water and then they're covering deep water, right, on a river or in a small creek. A lot of people just don't, that's lost in translation when we get on bigger water. Right? And I think that's one of the most compelling lessons from fishing that kind of water, that your knee jerk is to hit shallow and deep, but most people don't do that when we move to a flowage or we move to a natural lake. Right? And I think it teaches structure fishing in a way, it teaches you structure fishing if you're willing to observe and look at it and learn from it, right? And I think shallow water too, and something to look for if you get out and do this and get your head dialed in, is how fish will stage, obviously in current, right, with their noses into current. And something that I think is lost on a lot of people, it does not have to be massive current for muskies to stage in that manner, because
for sure,
they're innately a river fish, right? You look at their old scooped head and the way their body is, that head is meant to shove them down, belly on the bottom, conserve calories, and let that water run over them, right, and kind of hold them down. And you take that, and let's say we're going, whatever, pick a flowage in Wisconsin that has current adjacent. Just because that, even if it's a slow current, they'll stage the same. Right? And it's very valuable to see that. And you get to see that more in shallow, skinny water, or water that's a little bit more manageable. But when you take that, you can extrapolate that to neck down scenarios. It's something Bob and I talked about a lot. Is when we look at wind blown, right? When we talk about like a wind blown, you know, neck down, or wind blown, you know, areas where it's creating wind driven current, right? I hear a lot of guys are lake guys. They fish lakes, and then they get into this game and they start dabbling with current. There's predictability and how that fish is staged and facing, because it's innately ingrained in these fish, right?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
And what will happen is you'll see, and it's kind of interesting when we go say like a Lake of the Woods scenario or Canada scenario, whatever. There is a predictability in their staging that is lost on a lot of people of how they're going to do that, because you'll see a lot of times if like I'm looking for quote unquote the juice in a wind blown neck down scenario, right? I'm looking at the very edges of that, right? Where is the where does the impact of this wind blown scenario begin? And you can usually see it visually. And this is why I'm trying to tie the creeking into the big water, because it's the same rules. You know, it's like, it's almost laughable. I'm running around in a 12-foot boat that cost $800, right? Or I'm running in a 22-foot boat that costs whatever. And the rules are the same. And that's what I'm trying to just get across, is if I'm looking at a windblown, like a neck down scenario, we got kind of this hallway between the rocks or a hallway between the islands, or we've got a tree scenario or whatever it might be, and the wind is setting up where it's blowing there. The first place I'm going to look is where does the impact of the wind begin actually moving the surface water? Well, that's no different than finding a pocket or a pool or an eddy in a creek, right?
Yes, right.
Or take that to something wider like where Jay's fishing, Wisconsin River stuff. And it just expands and contracts. The rules expand and contract. And you'll see these Canadian scenarios where you go, okay, if they're really moving, they might be a little bit into the nastier blow. But in general, they're going to be right there. And you can find them because I'll watch guys approach, say, like a windblown scenario, whatever, especially Canada. It's Canada-esque thing. You know, everybody's looking for it. Oh, there's this. There's current neck downs because Lake of the Woods has current. Eagle has current. And everybody's trying to identify these. And you'll see what will happen in those windblown current areas. I'll watch dudes go in and they blow through them, right? Like, the way they stage your, the way you stage your boat is important. We'll get there in a second. But people will go into these windblown areas, Jay, and they fish it like everything's hot. And what I want to tell you from a current scenario is fish that are playing in current, right? They're staging in current. They generally stage with their body physically contacting something, right? And I think that's lost on a lot of people, and it's a lesson that fishing current will teach you that, okay, we need to extrapolate from, let's say we're in a 4-foot river. Well, now we've got this windblown area and it's 15 feet. You might be more apt to throw something that's going to close that proximity gap in a windblown area, right? Because I'll see guys go through, they see the wind stack, right? You see a wind stack happening on whatever neck down, pass through, whatever. That wind stacking, the muskies are coming in. They're staging on the edge of what's now created windblown current, right? They're physically going to stage touching something. So you need to consider what is the structural depth in relationship to this windblown area, because they're innately going to touch bottom when current's present and face into it, right? And I think that's one of the things that where people lose the juice, where that's a river lesson, and it translates to a lake extremely well, where you might not want to go through there and blare through with your bucktails and go, okay, they're not using this. They're not using it in the same way, in the same staging that a muskie would use a shallow edge or a weed bed. And I think that's the value of tying the two together, right? Is because the way they'll structurally stage is innately ingrained where they face into it. They're going to want to touch bottom because they don't want to, even a minimal current, they don't want to fight the current, right? I mean, they can if they want to, but even in a lazy river, what are they doing 90% of the time, Jay? You know, laying on the bottom, got their bellies on the sand or on the mud. And when we go to this, yeah,
I think it's lost on most people what you were talking about a second ago about, you know, lake current. You know, that is the last thing on most people's minds when it comes to location and, you know, trying to precisely figure out where muskies are staging. It's just like that is, it's just like people don't buy it. It's just like, oh, this is a landlocked lake or it's a small lake. It's just like, you know, and the wind is super impactful. And that might be the one thing that you could dial in on that, you know, exact day to actually have success or not, you know?
Well, I mean, if you take it to the, you know, whether we're talking, I mean, the whole overarching thing is just, you know, I got current on the brain and I've got structure on the brain, because I think what is, and we said we had hit some structure when we next show, but I mean, you know, it's one of those things that this is like, I'm out there living it and it clicks sometimes. And like I said, it's the effects of small water, big water, it's literally the same. It's just your search area is different, right? You have the same elements, right? Because if muskies are going to be somewhere, we need those elements, right? They need shallow predatory food shelves. They need deep water holding areas, yada, 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 ambush points, all the fun stuff. They're all present, right? And again, the whole thing of saying holes, right? Because when I talk about, man, growing up West Virginia Creek and got to go down to the interstate hole, got to go down to that hole, right? I mean, down Green River in Kentucky, every dang hole. Yeah, get down to the dirt hole, you know. Get down there, eat the hell out of them. That's every hillbilly I've ever met in my life, Jay, by the way. They're eating the hell out of hellbenders down there. Gotta get down there behind the chicken plant. But anyway, that's...
Can't understand you.
You can't? I said, they're eating the hell out of hellbenders. You gotta get behind the chicken plant, right? So tip of the hat, Kentucky.
Tip number one for the day, right there.
You're eating the hell out of hellbenders, son. You gotta get down there in that hole behind the chicken plant. I'll be damned. It's a whole different language, isn't it?
It is.
Yes, sir.
Sometimes I need someone to translate. So
you know, it's actually, I sent a text to somebody as an aside, right? You know, it's just like you could always tell whose parents smoked in school when they came to school in a Marlboro jacket that they bought with Marlboro Miles, right? You know, it's like you knew if their parents smoked Camel or Marlboro based upon their child's clothing. You'd be like, okay, their parents smoked Camel. He's got a Camel Joe t-shirt on that they bought with Camel cash. But anyway, God. Redneck extreme, Jay. But that's where the creaking comes from, and it's kind of like, you know, one could take the same concepts, right, of this and say you were something far more elevated than I, Jay. Say you floated beautiful trout streams in Idaho and Montana, right? There's far less bleach jugs in the water than what I grew up fishing, and you know, far less trash in the water.
Okay.
Far less meth, really. But other than that, it's the same thing of how fish stage and how fish will adjust based on conditions. And I think, like I said, the takeaway being in a small body of water or a river, that moving water will teach you structure. It will teach you current first and foremost, but the structural elements are there. And what I'm trying to say is there's a flip one way and a flip the other. What the flip on the river systems or the moving water is everyone says it's 100% current. They don't think about structure. They think about how the current is influencing where muskies are staged, right? So you'll overlook structural lessons in current. And then when people move to a lake, they overlook how current dictates staging. And you have to meld the two.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you can't go out on, say, I go on the small, you know, Emory or wherever I'm going. And you're going out doing this drift. And you go, okay, man, we were popping them there, popping them there. Okay. The easiest, the lowest hanging fruit, there's a go. The current had them in the holes, or the current had them on seams, or the current had them on little sand raise ups or whatever, right? And then the same thing could be said for popping them on rainbow flowage and not considering how the current went the other way. And so taking that, and I think that's why it's important to at some point in your musky career to get out there and be observant on that front, which is back to your lake scenario where you said, Jay, most people never even consider or even think about when created current. Even if you have a natural lake, you know, the rule of thumb is if you have a blow for 2-3 days, right?
Pushing. Right, that whole scenario. Sure.
And that's weird. And from a current standpoint, whether I'm right or wrong, this is how I conceptualize that. That's a bulldozer. Okay? Wind-blown current. Let's just call it wind or wind current because Minnesota is notorious for this. You have scrub brush, right? Jay, somebody should just donate them some trees. Maybe we should... instead of stalking muskie, maybe Minnesota should just take donations to plant trees around their lakes. That would make it nicer. But, you know, when the wind blows there, you know, I mean, heck, Bob's even told me there's some lakes up there. You know, you get above 15 miles an hour, it's just impassable, you know what I'm saying, because everything can build. But if we have wind blowing across the lake, an open basin, I think of it like a bulldozer that just comes through and it grabs all the water and shoves it one way, right? Eventually. So if the wind blows, this bulldozer comes and just grabs the water and shoves it. And if you ever watch like a bulldozer come through, Jay, it clears a path, right? That's the whole thing. You'll hit structure with that. So think of this push of water coming across. What structure and how does it interact with the direction of the wind? Right? Is there a point that lines up with that wind? Or is it blowing across things? Is it getting shoved? This line, you know what I'm saying? Take your arm, however you want to conceptualize it. You're just taking it and shoving this force across the lake. And what structures interact with that, and how do they interact, right? Is there a hump out in the middle of deep water in a basin where theoretically you're getting this wind push and this wind-driven current over top of stuff? It will tell you where and how they're going to stage, right? Because you'll see, let's say, a reef. Perfect example of we have a reef, and it's easier to conceptualize because you can see the top of it, right? Well, if we have wind blowing into the reef, where are they going to be? Generally, hanging right on. You'll catch one or two on the very front, right? Like when the wind's pounding into it, if things are really cooking. But generally, they're going to hang on the slack side of that, or on the very edges of where that wind's impacting, right? Because they get to be lazy, they get to conserve calories, and they can, you know, they can stage in such a manner that they can see what's coming at them. They're playing the wind, and everyone thinks it's wind. Well, it's a wind-driven current, or however you want to look at it. It's force. Sure. And that's why I said like a bulldozer, because, you know, we're talking about whether it be current or wind-driven current or just wind, it is something forcibly moving the water. Right. That's why I said, like, here comes the bulldozer across the lake, and it's just shoving all the fish, and it's shoving all the system, right? Depending on power and depending on, you know, I mean, if it's just a light puff of wind, that's not enough. But I'm saying, like, sustained winds, or, you know, hey, it's blowing, you know, west northwest for 4 days. You better be looking at it. And then you look at the direction of the wind, and you look at how structure could theoretically play to it. And like I said, for the reef, we're looking at that structure and how muskies might stage around it. You look at, to take it to a current-driven thing, let's take, you know, the scenario being a subsurface hump. If we have sustained winds, and let's say that hump is 15 feet down, but we've had a sustained wind, it will create slosh and current where those muskies are going to stage on the lee side of that hump. And it becomes a matter of, I'll see guys struggle in wind where they don't make structural adjustments for the wind. They might make the knee-jerk reaction. It's like, I just put the new Booker article on the app, right? He sent another article this week, and it's like the north side rule, right? Here's the north, fish the north side of the lake in spring. That's the crux of it, right? Okay, cool. But that's the same lesson and the same overarch that one can say when we talk about wind or current. Fish the wind-blown side, right, Jay?
Right.
Fish the wind-blown side. Well, why aren't you scoring? Because you're not thinking about the structure, how that's creating structural issues, right? Or structural.
Right, because it's not a constant stream.
There you
know,
you
that
go.
Current, yep. That wind-driven current is not constant. And every time it's rolling over any kind of structural change.
Yep. And it.
The whole current is changing. And then, the underwater. Yep.
And it.
I mean, that's it. Yep. That's what it is.
It rolls and it creates different. I mean, if you think that. this is one of those things, right? This is stupid. Everybody put on, just prepare to erase your mind of this statement. But I love, Jay, I love taking things and making it, you know, make the example of it, right? But the best way to, so dumb, but that's what I've explained to guy clients. The best way to understand current sometimes is to stand out in the wind. We don't get to stand underwater, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how many times, Jay, have you seen it? Like, okay, you got a wind blowing through here. If you go around the corner of the building, guess what? You don't feel the wind. It's not affecting you.
Or it feels like it's coming from a different direction.
Uh-huh.
Oh, the wind just changed. No, it didn't. No, it didn't. Affected by that little turn and that little bit of arc in the landscape ahead of it.
And you watch... And what was that stupid movie where they're like, there's the trash? It was like a shopping bag's in the air and it's blowing around. He's like, this is the most beautiful thing. Remember
American
that?
Pie?
Yeah, horrible. No, it wasn't that. It was some movie that it's like an art house piece of
no, crap. Not American Pie. American
Beauty or some stupid
Beauty. Yep.
Horrible
yep.
movie. Call them like you see them. If your big kicker in the movie is we got a damn shopping bag from the Dollar General. I'm out. Anyway, because I'm too dumb to understand art, apparently. But you think of that and you look at leaves, where they accumulate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Look where wind-blown trash will accumulate. Right?
I hear you.
It's the same. Oh God, again, erase your brain on this. But if you look at it and you stare at it, and you go, oh, okay. It's the same rules, right? Like the wind direction at my house, it blows across, you know, pretty consistent. You have your average wind, and I go, okay, well, over here by my side of my house, there's always a pile of freaking leaves because they get blown through and they just kind of spiral and stick there. Right? Use some of these terrestrial things to just kind of observe. I know it's stupid, but it's force. You know what I'm saying? It's just a way to observe force, and when you have a straight vector of force, so you have wind going one direction and it hits a physical object like the side of my house, things blow by it and then there's a void behind it. That's pockets and eddies, and watching that, and you can translate it because it's just, I know it's a stupid example, but if you get what I'm saying.
No, it's a really good example, actually. Yeah, everyone can relate to that. You can, for sure.
Not that one. There's one guy that's never seen wind listening to the show, Jay, I guarantee.
Well, you can't see wind, Steve.
He'll email us.
The effects of wind.
My name is Daryl Polansky from Plainfield, Illinois, and I have never seen wind. But, you know, sorry, burning a little hot tonight. No, it's just something to take, you know, and it's an observable moment. It's like talking with last week with a guy on the boat just about structure. And I think one of the coolest things that you can do, that it's like an epiphany moment, is seeing reservoirs in drawdown states, right? Seeing a southern reservoir that's down 40 feet is pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And that's a Buck Perry lesson. I mean, before I was even born, Buck Perry was going, northern anglers would do themselves a favor to observe this stuff. Now, through the joys of technology, I guarantee there's reservoirs in drawdown videos. I will seek this out and see if I can't find some to put. Heck, it might be somebody's tourism video or somebody's backyard or something. Or hell, I'll film some, because it's interesting, because you go, oh, that's what a point looks like, right? And you get to see a point outside of the water. It's like taking all the water out of your lake and going, oh, that's what's over there. And then you see how fish react to it, and then you know, kind of catalog in your brain how this stuff works. But like I said, from a current standpoint, the best I can do in the same example is paying attention to how wind affects things. That's it, you know, and this is going to sound dumb, but I'm giving it because concepts are what, if everybody can throw a bait, concepts is what catches fish. You know, we think about current,
Well, when you got birds and you got a lot of wind, how do they react, Jay? If you got blowing wind, right? Take a seagull. Some of them will sit up there in the wind and wait for things to blow by them, right? And others will just sit and wait and fly up and grab something and go back down. And that's the way I think about current is like, yeah, you'll have super active feeders. They might be up and cruising and holding, but it's most of them are going to be holding. So they're conserving calories, then popping up and grabbing and going back down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Which changes how we need to affect proximity. I mean, back to the windblown stuff, you know, when I was saying like the north side rule, and then we go to like a windblown, you could take the same thing to the windblown thing, right? So if we're going on the windblown side, well, where people struggle is when lake current is present, how that fish will stage, and it's generally deeper, even with seasonality, because I believe like current or windblown scenarios trump seasonality. So you get that big wind stack and you need to adjust a bait running depth according to how strong that's pushing stuff. But anyway, goodness, Jay, rabbit holes. I'm sorry. Rabbit hole of just a going there. And I apologize we'll get back to the Q&A. This is like just crazy week for me, folks. Imagine if you had all your relatives came to town and they were just real, real needy. All of them were prima donnas and very needy, right?
So. How long is that classic? Is it like a Friday through Sunday tournament?
Too damn long. It's
can't be more than 3 days, is it?
No, the tournament itself, but the media blitz, what it is, yeah. Is we got like Livingston has like Rick Klun series of bass baits that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So yours truly has been work, you know, getting that right. And then he did some, there's some cool stuff. There's some cool crossover stuff because he's the goat. I mean, just forget about it. And he's got some bass stuff he's working on that I might put on the app or have him back on the show. Just kind of some of his structural takeaways, you know, and some of his observations. But now they've got that Klun series of bass baits coming out. So that's part of the, that's why I've been, Jay, every night just to get the, I have bluing on my lips. People think I just ate a popsicle. It's gun bluing. He sit there empty. Dad, did you have one of those Smurf pops? No, that was a 38. It's just a crazy freaking crazy week. No, it's tough. It's tough. The bass guys are special, Jay. They're a different flavor.
They're special.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's fun. But now we actually have a pal of mine, Laker Hal, Randy's son's in the classic. So I talked to him. That poor kid. You want to talk about, I don't know how he's just rattled. I hope he wins. You know what I'm saying? It'd be awesome if he did, but man, it's when you're behind the scenes. I mean, if you just go to the show, it's all like, oh, you know, happy go lucky consumerism, but you know, you peek behind the curtain at Oz, it's a different animal, but no, it's fun getting it all up there, getting it done. So, all right, next week, we'll get to your Q&A. We'll be much better, boys. Be good.
Great. Okay.
Be good.
Sounds
anyway,
good.
Anyway, sorry. Sorry for my sermon on thoughts, deep thoughts with Steve. So,
well,
anyway.
Once more, you got to go creaking, Steve.
Every now and again, Creaker Extreme. Say good mid-morning, Jaybird.
Good morning from the Muskie Shop. See you guys.
All right.